I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. This is Democracy Now!
President Trump has ceded the presidency to Elon Musk. No, no, that's not happening.
The Republican-led Congress rejects a last-minute demand for a debt limit suspension from President-elect Donald Trump and his billionaire advisor Elon Musk, who many are calling President Musk. We'll speak with the American Prospect editor Robert Kuttner. He says Musk outmaneuvered Trump. Then, merci Gisèle. That was the nationwide response in France to Gisèle Pelicot, the 72-year-old French woman whose landmark rape case galvanized France. On Thursday, her husband and 50 other men were sentenced for raping her for more than a decade. She insisted on dropping her anonymity.
I'm thinking about the victims who aren't recognized and whose stories often remain in the shadows. I want you to know we share the same struggle.
We'll speak with the French journalist Diane de Vignemont. She covered the Avignon trial and wrote about finding sisterhood at France's mass rape trial. Then to Bethlehem in the Israeli-occupied West Bank.
We said last year, Christ is in the rubble. And this year we say, Christ is still in the rubble. The rubble is his manger. Jesus finds his place with the marginalized, the tormented, the oppressed, and the displaced. We look at the Holy Family and see them in every displaced and homeless family living in despair.
We'll speak with and hear part of the Christmas address of Reverend Mother Isaac, pastor at the Evangelical Lutheran Christmas Church in Bethlehem. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. President Biden has spared the lives of 37 men on federal death row. Earlier today, Biden commuted their sentences to life without parole just weeks before President-elect Donald Trump returns to the White House. In a statement, Biden said, quote, I am more convinced than ever that we must stop the use of the death penalty at the federal level. In good conscience, I cannot stand back and let a new administration resume executions that I halted, unquote. Brian Stevenson, founder and executive director of the Equal Justice Initiative, praised Biden's decision, calling it, quote, an important turning point in ending America's tragic and error-prone use of the death penalty, unquote. Biden did not commute the sentences of three men on federal death row. Dylan Roof, who killed nine black parishioners at Mother Emanuel AME Church in Charleston, South Carolina. Boston Marathon bomber Dzhokhar Tsarnaev. And Robert Bowers, who attacked the Pittsburgh Tree of Life Synagogue in 2018, killing 11 congregants in the deadliest anti-Semitic attack in U.S. history. The head of the U.N. Palestinian Refugee Agency, UNRWA, has accused Israel of escalating attacks across the Gaza Strip. UNRWA head Philippe Lazzarini said, quote, attacks on schools and hospitals have been commonplace. The world must not become numb. All wars have rules. All of those rules have been broken, unquote. On Friday, an Israeli airstrike on the Jabalia refugee camp killed 12 members of a family, including seven children. In a separate attack Friday, an Israeli drone struck a residential building in the Nusayrat refugee camp, killing at least eight people. Overnight, Israeli drones attacked the so-called safe zone of Al-Mawasi, killing at least 11 people and setting tents on fire. In northern Gaza, Israel continues to attack Kamal Adwan Hospital. Israel's used tanks, snipers, and quadcopters to attack the medical center where over 400 civilians have sought medical care and shelter. This is Dr. Hussam Abu Safiya, director of Kamal Adwan Hospital.
We do not know why we are being bombed, and we do not know why we are being targeted in this way. Despite us asking the world for international protection, we continue to appeal to the world and remind them that there are Geneva Conventions that the world sings praises of. This includes the protection of the healthcare system and the protection of hospital staff. Up until this moment, unfortunately, we are being targeted in full view of the entire world, but unfortunately falling on deaf ears.
This comes as a new report by Oxfam finds just 12 aid trucks have managed to distribute aid to starving Palestinian civilians in northern Gaza over the past 2.5 months. In three cases, Israel shelled schools, turned shelters just hours after aid was delivered. On Saturday, Pope Francis condemned what he called the cruelty of Israel's bombardment of Gaza.
Cardinal Ray.
Cardinal Ray spoke about the war yesterday. They did not let the patriarch enter into Gaza as they had promised. And yesterday, children were bombed. This is cruelty. This is not war. I wanted to say this because it touches the heart.
The Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is currently on trial for corruption in Israel. Turkey's foreign minister traveled to Damascus Sunday to meet with Syria's new de facto ruler, Ahmed al-Sharaa, the head of the Islamist group HTS that toppled the Assad regime. According to press accounts, they discussed the need for Syria to draft a new constitution, the future of the Kurds, and Israel's attacks on Syrian sovereignty. Meanwhile, the Biden administration's moving to lift a $10 million bounty the U.S. had placed on al-Sharaa over his links to al-Qaeda. On Friday, a U.S. delegation met with him in Damascus. The foreign ministers of Jordan and Qatar are in the Syrian capital for meetings today. Meanwhile, the Pentagon's acknowledged there are now about 2,000 U.S. troops in Syria, more than double the previously announced figure of 900. Over the weekend, Congress reached a deal to avert a federal shutdown by passing a slimmed-down temporary government spending plan that'll fund the government until mid-March. The final vote came days after the world's richest man and Trump advisor Elon Musk helped torpedo an earlier version of the spending bill that had been negotiated by the Republican House Speaker Mike Johnson. Several key initiatives were then removed from the bill, including $190 million for children's cancer research. A provision to suspend the debt ceiling was also removed, despite that being a top demand of President-elect Trump. Biden signed the new funding legislation on Saturday. We'll have more on this story after headlines. The House Ethics Committee has determined former Florida Republican Congressmember Matt Gaetz committed statutory rape involving a 17-year-old high school student who he paid to have sex with. The 37-page ethics report is expected to be formally released today. CBS obtained a leaked version of the report, which states, quote, "The committee determined there is substantial evidence that Representative Gaetz violated House rules and other standards of conduct prohibiting prostitution, statutory rape, illicit drug use, impermissible gifts, special favors or privileges, and obstruction of Congress," unquote. Last month, Donald Trump picked Gaetz to be his attorney general, but Gaetz stepped aside as outrage grew over his selection. President-elect Trump has threatened to retake the Panama Canal if Panama doesn't lower fees for U.S. ships. The United States controlled the waterway since the early 20th century, but in 1977, President Jimmy Carter signed a landmark treaty to give Panama control of the canal. Trump made the threat during a speech Sunday in Arizona.
"If the principles, both moral and legal, of this magnanimous gesture of giving are not followed, then we will demand that the Panama Canal be returned to the United States of America in full, quickly, and without question."
Panama's president, Jose Raul Mulino, rejected Trump's threat in a video posted online.
"I want to express that every square meter of the Panama Canal and its adjacent areas belong to Panama and will continue to belong to Panama. The sovereignty and independence of our country are not negotiable."
On Sunday, President-elect Trump also posted a message online saying the United States should take ownership of Greenland, which is controlled by Denmark. Trump wrote, quote, for purposes of national security and freedom throughout the world, the United States of America feels that the ownership and control of Greenland is an absolute necessity, unquote. Trump's statement on Greenland was made as he announced he was picking PayPal co-founder Ken Howery as his pick for United States ambassador to Denmark. Germany's in mourning after a man drove his car into a Christmas market in the city of Magdeburg. Four women and a 9-year-old boy were killed. About 200 people were injured. Police arrested a Saudi-born man who had a long history of posting messages on social media criticizing his former faith of Islam while voicing support for the far-right anti-immigrant AFD. That's Alternative for Germany Party. Saudi Arabia had once warned Germany that the man, Talib al-Abdulmohsen, posed a threat. In other German-related news, the world's richest man, Elon Musk, has weighed into German politics ahead of their upcoming elections by also supporting the far-right AFD. Early on Friday, Musk posted a message on his platform X that read, quote, only the AFD can save Germany. The Inter-American Court of Human Rights has ruled against El Salvador in a historic abortion case. The court ruled El Salvador violated the rights of a woman named Beatriz, who was denied an abortion in 2013, even though her life was in danger due to her high-risk pregnancy. The court ordered El Salvador to allow doctors to perform abortions in cases of, quote, pregnancies that pose a risk to the woman's life and health. El Salvador has one of the strictest abortion bans in the world. In San Salvador, women celebrated the Inter-American Court of Human Rights ruling.
We've received numerous messages globally. I want to express gratitude for the immense solidarity and celebrate this decision towards us women. It's a victory for the feminist movement, which has stood by Beatriz's case for 11 years.
In another major decision, the Inter-American Court of Human Rights has ruled the nation of Colombia violated the rights of the Uwa indigenous people by authorizing oil, gas, and mining projects on their land. The group Earth Rights International said the historic decision could set a precedent for the protection of indigenous peoples in Colombia and across Latin America. The court determined Colombia had an obligation to consult indigenous peoples about extractive projects that may affect them. A new investigation by The Washington Post has determined that more than 3,100 indigenous students died at boarding schools in the United States between 1828 and 1970. That figure is three times the number of deaths reported earlier this year by the U.S. Interior Department. The Post's year-long investigation also found more than 800 students were buried in cemeteries at or near the schools, which were designed to crush Native American culture. Many of the children had been forcibly removed from their families and tribes. The top uniformed police officer in New York City has resigned after coming under investigation that he repeatedly pressured female officers to have sex with him. Jeffrey Madry had served as chief of department since he was appointed in 2022 by his close friend, New York Mayor Eric Adams. One New York police lieutenant said Madry exploited her emotional and financial vulnerabilities to coerce her into sex in exchange for opportunities to make extra money by working overtime. And the Times of Israel is reporting Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is planning to skip a major event in Poland next month to mark 80 years since the liberation of the Nazi concentration camp at Auschwitz, out of fears he might be arrested for committing war crimes in Gaza. In November, the International Criminal Court issued an arrest warrant for Netanyahu, as well as his former defense minister, Yoav Gallant. Poland's deputy foreign minister recently confirmed Poland would comply with the ICC arrest warrants if Netanyahu visits Poland. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. War, peace, and the presidency. I'm Amy Goodman. We begin today's show with the stopgap legislation passed Friday by the Republican-controlled House that averted a government shutdown and also rejected a last-minute demand for a debt limit suspension from President-elect Donald Trump and his billionaire advisor Elon Musk, who many are calling President Musk. Biden signed the measure Saturday morning. Funding for pediatric cancer research that was cut from the final bill was passed in the Senate as a separate measure after outrage over the move. The spending bill will keep federal funding at current levels through mid-March and provides $100 billion in disaster aid and $10 billion in assistance to farmers. It came after the original spending bill, based on Republican House Speaker Mike Johnson's deal with Democrats, was rejected when Trump's billionaire advisor Elon Musk objected to it. Musk, the world's richest man, warned on his platform X that any lawmaker who supported the spending bill, quote, deserves to be voted out in 2 years. And he said he would fund the primarying of those Congress members. After the House voted to avert the government shutdown, Republican House Speaker Mike Johnson said he thought both Trump and Musk were happy with it.
I was in constant contact with President Trump throughout this process, spoke with him most recently about 45 minutes ago. He knew exactly what we were doing and why, and this is a good outcome for the country. I think he certainly is happy about this outcome as well. Elon Musk and I talked to within about an hour ago, and we talked about the extraordinary challenges of this job. And I said, hey, you want to be Speaker of the House? I don't know. He said, this may be the hardest job in the world. I think it is. But we're going to get through this.
Well, meanwhile, in a speech at the conservative group Turning Point USA's conference called America First, President-elect Trump tried to joke about how Musk had flexed his political power.
No, he's not taking the presidency. I like having smart people. You know, they're on a new kick. Russia, 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 Ukraine, 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 all the different hoaxes. And the new one is President Trump has ceded the presidency to Elon Musk. No, no, that's not happening. But Elon's done an amazing job. Isn't it nice to have smart people that we can rely on?
President-elect Trump was addressing Turning Point in their conference, America Fest. For more, we're joined by Robert Kuttner, co-founder and co-editor of The American Prospect. He has been following this story very closely. His recent piece, How Musk Outmaneuvered Trump, his latest book, Going Big, FDR's Legacy, Biden's New Deal, and the Struggle to Save Democracy. Robert Kuttner, welcome back to Democracy Now! So why do you think Musk outmaneuvered Trump here? And talk about what was passed.
So if you go back to last Tuesday, Johnson and the Democrats had agreed on a bill to continue funding the government, and it had about 100 other bipartisan provisions in it, including, and this was the one that was most important to Musk, a provision that had been negotiated by Senator Cornyn of Texas, a Republican, and Senator Casey of Pennsylvania, a Democrat, to limit high-tech investments in China for national security purposes. Now, it just happens that Elon Musk has Tesla factories in China and is planning AI in China. And a ban on high-tech exports would have really messed with his whole business strategy centered on China. It was at that point that Musk begins this Twitter storm of more than 100 tweets warning that this bill is too expensive, that it's outrageous, that it contains, you know, a 40% pay raise for Congress and a whole bunch of things that just weren't true. This was all a smokescreen to get Congress to kill the bill because it had this China provision that would have cost Musk a lot of money. So about 12 hours after that, Trump, who had been silent about the bill, clamors on board and says, you know, there's a terrible bill and you need to change it so that it includes a provision waiving the temporary debt ceiling. Well, by Thursday, the bill was dead. They had to negotiate a whole new bill. And at the end of the day, Congress wanted to go home for Christmas. And so it passes overwhelmingly. But in the meantime, 38 Republicans had refused to get on board with this waiver of the debt ceiling. The Democrats were never going to give Trump that kind of leverage. So the Democrats were never going to vote for a waiver of the debt ceiling. Trump must have known that. End of the day, Musk got exactly what he wanted. The China provision was stripped from the bill. Trump did not get what he wanted. The waiver was not included in the bill. And so it's a classic case of Musk rolling Trump. And so there are a couple of questions here. Is Trump aware of this? Is he whistling past the graveyard, as that comment suggested? He's not stupid. He may be evil, but he's not stupid. And he must know that Trump, that Musk took him to the cleaners on this, and that this is going to happen going forward, right? I mean, Trump is supposed to be some kind of a China hawk. So there are going to be all kinds of conflicts between what Trump wants to do and what's good for Musk's business interest. And these are both narcissistic guys. I argue that there's room for only one scorpion in this bottle, and that at some point, Musk is going to overplay his hand, and Trump is going to get sick of him. The other point I want to make is that the media, the mainstream media, completely missed this story. The mainstream media has played this as, is Johnson in trouble, and why the bipartisanship didn't work, and what that portends going forward. And not a single mainstream media outlet, with the exception of a kind of minor reference by E.J. Dionne and a very nice discussion of it by Heather Cox Richardson, the mainstream media did not touch this story at all. Politico had another characteristically stupid piece this morning on this is all about whether Trump can control Johnson. That's not what it's all about at all. A deal that included a waiver of the debt ceiling was never in the cards. There were never the votes for that. There were 38 fiscally conservative Republicans who weren't going to vote for it. The Democrats were never going to vote for it. And by the way, the threat to primary those Republicans, most of those are in very, very safe seats. So again, Musk is going to demonstrate that this particular threat is just idle bluster. And the other interesting thing here is that unintentionally, this puts a little bit of spine in the Republican caucus in the House and the Senate. They're willing to eat a lot of crow for Trump, but at some point, even the spineless Republicans in the House and Senate get sick of being treated as nothing but rubber stamps.
So, Robert Kuttner, talk about Democratic House leader, the leader of the minority, Hakeem Jeffries, allegedly discussing permanently abolishing the debt ceiling. Can you talk about the significance of this discussion? And because it's just referred to as the debt ceiling or eliminating it, explain exactly what it is.
Okay. So, in the early 20th century, legislation was passed requiring Congress to explicitly pass a law increasing the permissible amount of the national debt. Up until then, Congress could pass whatever it wanted to. And if Congress passed deficit funding and that temporarily increased the national debt, that was just the way it was. It was assumed that because Congress had voted to increase the deficit and that temporarily increased the national debt, that took care of it. And then during World War One, they decided, well, when the government was borrowing a lot of money to prosecute the war, they decided, no, there ought to be a separate vote extending the debt ceiling. And for a long time, this was just pro forma. And then beginning in the 80s and 90s, Republicans used this as a cudgel to threaten a government shutdown if Democrats would not cut particular spending programs. And for about 40 years, the ritual of, you know, are we going to fall off a cliff and shut down the government, or are they going to some kind of compromise and extend the debt ceiling? That has been a part of American fiscal politics. So at various points, various Democrats and various Republicans have said, you know, this is silly. This is a distraction. Let's get rid of it. And when the Democrats have wanted to get rid of it, the Republicans have said, oh, no, we're not going to give up that leverage, and vice versa. So in this context, when Trump is about to become president and Musk is talking about cutting $2 billion worth of social programs, there aren't even $2 trillion worth of social programs. Tactically, this is not the moment for the Democrats to give this up. So I think Jeffries sort of talked about this as some part of some kind of grand bargain in the future, but not in this particular moment.
Can you talk about what the Republicans cut out in the House. I mean, this astounding, $190 million for pediatric cancer research, and then what the Senate did to fix that. But what exactly this means?
Well, there were about 100 provisions, bipartisan provisions, that had been painstakingly negotiated in good faith across the aisle by Republicans and Democrats that were part of the budget deal that Musk succeeded in killing. The Senate managed to restore, I think, four of them. They restored some farm relief. They restored some disaster aid. They restored some funding for pediatric cancer research. And I think there was one other relief measure. But the other 96 were on the cutting room floor. And those included, you know, a very small token raise for Congress. I think cost of living raise of 2.5%. Musk, in his Twitter storm, described this as a 40% raise. And there were lots of other good pieces of legislation, the most important of which was this China provision that, you know, people concerned with national security exports of militarily sensitive technologies to China have been trying to get for a long time. This is bipartisan. And that and all these other provisions were just left out of the bill because the final bill was what's called a continuing resolution. Let's just fund the government at the same level until the middle of March. And then the Senate did succeed in restoring these three or four provisions.
And I also wanted to ask you about Elon Musk and his interests here. I mean, if he wields this much power, and people talk about, well, he's not even elected, he doesn't want to be elected because he would have to abide by some conflict of interest laws. You've got him holding over $15 billion in federal contracts through SpaceX, Tesla, Neuralink companies. Talk about the significance of this and how he benefits by what he pushes for.
Well, the really interesting thing is, if you can imagine Musk playing this game at Trump's expense one time too often. And then you say to yourself, okay, going forward, can Trump, like he's done with so many other people, simply say, you're fired? Or does Musk have too much leverage over Trump? Or conversely, does Trump have a lot of leverage over Musk? So if Musk became Trump's enemy, that could do a lot of damage to Trump. On the other hand, Musk is dependent on all these government contracts. NASA has basically been outsourced to Musk, right? He makes a ton of money on all of these rocket launches through his company, SpaceX. He also controls a lot of battlefield satellite technology on which the Pentagon is dependent. And that cuts both ways. A lot of people at the Pentagon think this is terrible. They want to come up with some other vendors so they're not so totally dependent on Musk, who sometimes has his own foreign policy. I mean, Ukraine battlefield communications were dependent on Starlink. And Musk started saying, well, I don't like the fact that you're doing this inside Russia, so maybe I'm not going to let you use Starlink. So not only does he have his own independent fiscal policy, he's got his own independent foreign policy. So if you play this forward, at some point, Trump decides that, wait a minute, this guy has too much power. He's upstaging me. He's promoting some things that are at odds with my own agenda. And then Musk can say, well, look, I got six different ways I can screw you. And I was looking back at history. I could not find another single case in the entire annals of world history where another leader who had dictatorial ambitions put somebody who he didn't control in such a position of power. So I don't think this is going to end well. And how exactly it ends will be fascinating to watch. And there's useful collateral damage here, which, as I said a moment ago, is that Republicans in Congress, both the House and the Senate, you know, are getting a little bit weary of this, too. You don't threaten 38 members of the Republican House who have the safest Republican seats without getting some kind of backlash. And you don't appoint a clown car to key cabinet offices without getting some kind of backlash, even from Republican senators. So
Bob Cutner, I want to go to my last question because we have to wrap in a minute. And that is the article you just wrote for American Prospect headlined How AARP Shills for United Healthcare, in which you ask, why does the supposed advocate for the elderly steer them to the industry's worst insurer? In this last minute, lay out what you found.
It's a very simple answer. They get a billion dollars